What's going on, everybody? Justin Morgenstein back with you for another edition of Phillies Today. Phillies' magic number to get in the postseason remains at 1. To win the NL East remains at 4 after last night's, we'll say, Taijuan Walker debacle at Citi Field. The Phillies dropped their second in a row last night in blowout fashion. Well, you know, it was a blowout, but the Phillies' offense did claw their way back a little, but still, game ends up 10-6 with, you know, the Phillies still looking to get into the postseason here as some teams start to wrap up postseason berths, and the Phillies looking to do that as well here. And then, you know, potentially wrap up a number one or two seed in the National League. So, yeah, like I said, last night, not great. You have the number five spot come up in the rotation once again. You know, they've tried Colby Allard. They've tried Tyler Phillips. Obviously, they've tried Taijuan Walker. And, you know, it's something that's going to come up maybe once or twice the rest of the year, but just not great last night, of course. And they try to stretch him out into a fourth inning, and I understand it from both sides. I understand Rob Thompson's logic after the game when he says, you know, we've got games through next Thursday with no off day, and we got to find a way to stretch our starter out a little bit because we don't want to tax all the guys in our bullpen on the first game of this Mets series, which, again, is a critical series for both the Phillies and the Mets, as the Mets hold a two-game lead in the wild card standings over the Atlanta Braves for the final spot. And the Phillies remain six games up despite the loss last night. And so it's a big game. It's a, you know, big series for both teams here. So a little disappointed that they didn't make the change getting back to Taijuan. You know, when it was 4-3 in the fourth inning, that I thought they could have maybe went to Jose Ruiz with the clean inning, and, you know, things could have looked different from the fourth inning on there when you still had a one-run deficit. I thought the offense actually did a nice job responding after, you know, getting down early. Taijuan gives up three home runs, and, you know, after that disastrous fourth inning, it ends up 9-3 and or 7-3. Who even? I can't even remember at this point. But it was rough. It was brutal. So, Taijuan Walker, I'm not sure if that's the last we've seen of him. It might be. I think that's probably going to be a decision that is made in the offseason, whether or not they choose to eat some of that money and move on without him. But that's a problem for a different day because, you know, this team has a postseason berth to clinch, and I think that they still will be able to accomplish that this weekend and accomplish getting a top two seed. The Brewers lost last night too, which, again, is a good sign because you really want one of those two seeds to get the bye in the first round of the postseason. So, yeah, that was last night. Pretty rough, but, again, just got to have a good weekend here. Take two of three. If you split the series from the Mets, it's really all you need to do. And I don't want people to start panicking about the division because it's just mathematically very difficult for the Phillies to really choke away this division right now. And John Foley of On Patterson put this out on Twitter yesterday, and I thought, you know, kind of wrapped it up perfectly, is the Phillies lead the Mets by seven games. This was before last night, by the way. The Phillies lead the Mets by seven games with 10 left to play. The Mets' path to winning the NL East would look like this. They would have to sweep this upcoming four-game series against the Phillies to cut the lead to three games. This step would obviously include Sanchez, who goes tonight, and Zach Wheeler, who goes later in the weekend. The Mets would then have to win three more games in their final six against Atlanta and Milwaukee. Again, both, well, Milwaukee already clinched, but Atlanta also contending for a playoff spot. Then the Phillies win in their final six against the Cubs and the Nationals. They would have to go, the Mets would then have to go 6-0, and the Phillies would have to go 3-3 in their final six. So basically, the Mets would need to win all 10 of their games if the Phillies go 3-7. If the Phillies were to go 4-6, even if the Mets won 10 straight games, it wouldn't get it done. So is it mathematically possible? You know, absolutely. Very highly unlikely. So I don't think Phillies fans should be panicking about the division. I think the concern really comes with getting a top two seed right now. So that should be the priority for Phillies fans. The Phillies are right now tied with the Dodgers for the best record in the National League, and they do hold the tiebreaker over the Dodgers. And by the way, while I'm on the Dodgers subject, Shohei Ohtani yesterday, I mean, my goodness, he becomes the first player, obviously, in modern-day baseball to have a 50-50 season, 50 home runs, 50 stolen bases, and what a day he has to do it with. I have him in the fantasy playoffs for both leagues, so that was nice. And he goes 6-for-6 yesterday. Yes, I said it, 6 for 6 with 3 home runs, 17 total bases, 10 RBI, 4 runs, 2 stolen bases. I mean, what is going on here? I mean, it is just ridiculous. And the fact that he did that on a record-breaking day kind of speaks to Ohtani's greatness and what he is. And I know the last home run was off a position player. Don't care. It was incredible to watch. And, you know, while that's going on, I'm watching Taijuan Walker pitch for the Phillies. I'm like, something's not right there. And so I was kind of trying to flip back and forth. But it was incredible seeing when he hit that last home run. It was like everyone was in disbelief. But incredible stuff from Shohei Ohtani there. But like I said, the Phillies and the Dodgers tied for that top record in the National League. The Phillies hold the tiebreaker with both the Dodgers and the Brewers. So that is also something to keep in mind while looking at the standings here. So, again, just have a good weekend. Get 2 or 3. You've Sanchez. You've Wheeler. You've Ranger on the mound on Saturday. So we'll get to the rest of the weekend preview at the end of the pod. But I want to dive in to the lineup and to the rotation and pitching staff a little here as well. So let's talk about the Brewers series. I thought with the offense, in game 2, the offensive approach was really good. But besides that, a lot of strikeouts. And they had 16 strikeouts in the final game of that series. They lose 2-1 in extra innings. And Aaron Nola had a really good out and tried to get the Phillies into the postseason, but the offense just couldn't do enough to get them there. They lose, like I said, 2-1 in extra innings and really just failed to tack on any runs after Alec Boehm hits a solo shot in the second inning. Speaking of Boehm, I thought something that was pretty interesting that a decision Rob Thompson made that he decided to switch back last night was Castellanos and Boehm in the 4 and the 5 spot. I thought it was very interesting once Boehm got back from injury that he kept Nick Castellanos in the 4 spot. And I don't know if that's something that he plans on tinkering with going forward, but I feel like I didn't understand why Castellanos was given the 4 hole while Alec Boehm had been basically a cleanup hitter all year. And yes, maybe they wanted a little bit more power there, which is something that Nick Castellanos can provide you. And, you know, but despite Boehm missing maybe 2 weeks or so, he still leads the National League in doubles. He's still an RBI machine, and I would be surprised if that was something that they had planned moving forward, that Boehm was going to hit 5th and Castellanos was going to hit 4th, because believe it or not, Castellanos' numbers in the 5 spot are actually better pretty much all around. And I'd get it if Nick Castellanos was setting the world on fire from the 4 spot with Boehm out the last couple of weeks, but you know, he's hit 175 with a 286 slug from the 4 spot since Boehm went down, and I don't know, maybe it's just something where they're looking for some more pop out of that, you know, cleanup's position. But I would be very surprised if it wasn't Boehm moving forward. And I just think that having somebody there who can put the bat on the ball and at least be able to move runners over is what you really want in that spot. So something to monitor moving forward. And I think the rest of the lineup is pretty much set. And, you know, we'll see if that is something that they tinker with as the season winds down here. But from that series, just wanted to kind of touch on the pitching staff a little bit before I get into the rest of the lineup. I thought Nola really good on Wednesday night, by the way, and just the fact that he bounced back from the last 2 starts and was able to kind of, it's so funny with Aaron Nola sometimes because you really don't know what you're getting. The previous 2 starts, it's like everything's up in the zone. Stuff's not there. Clearly doesn't have the fastball command, and he gets hammered. And it's like, well, there's the Aaron Nola that you're just not sure if you could trust in a big spot. But for the 3rd year in a row, he goes to the mound looking to clinch a playoff spot. And, you know, he was masterful on Wednesday night. He kind of had everything working for him. The cutter was moving really good inside the hands of hitters. I thought that, you know, curveball was good as always. And some of the stuff was nasty. And he pitched a really, really good game out there in Milwaukee. And it's a shame that Rhys Hoskins had to get him. Rhys Hoskins, he's got home runs this year against Zach Wheeler and Aaron Nola, which is just, you know, obviously pretty funny. And Rhys isn't having a great year himself, but a couple big home runs against the Phillies. And again, the important thing in that Milwaukee series was the fact they were able to win the night before and secure a series win over the course of the year against the Brewers. And that means that you clinch the tiebreaker against them. So if the Phillies were to, let's say, tie with Milwaukee for second place in the National League, then the Phillies would own that tiebreaker and then get the two seed, which means that Milwaukee would have to play in the division series. And they, again, mentioned before, they lost last night, so the Phillies still have a three-game lead on them, which is really a four-game lead because of that tiebreaker. So, yeah, Nola, really good. But Zach Wheeler, speaking of the winning that game, just absolutely incredible once again. And it's really tough because I think Chris Sale has done enough to win the Cy Young, and he has just been really, really consistently good all year. But Zach Wheeler is right in the mix for that. And he is just, people talk about him being underappreciated. I don't know if it's underappreciated at this point. Everyone around the league knows that Zach Wheeler is an absolute superstar, and you hear people talk about it all the time, and I've mentioned it on this podcast, I think, over the past year, countless times. In a big game where you have to win one game, I'm not taking anybody in baseball over Zach Wheeler right now. It's truly, he is on another level in terms of just going out there for one game that you really need and just putting up a masterful outing and giving your team a chance to win. He is just, that was such a professional outing by him on Tuesday night. And the fact that he was able to, you know, get this team to a win when they really needed just one in Milwaukee was really, really big, and was really impressive to see. And there's no doubt that if, hey, NLDS game one, that's your guy. So, and I know we're going to get into some, you know, different possibilities in terms of the number two, the number three, and how the rest of the rotation is going to kind of shake out in the postseason here. But Wheeler is by surely your number one, and I guess I'll get into it right now. But there's a debate between Chris Sanchez and Aaron Nola as your number two starter. And look, I think that there's 170 million reasons probably why Aaron Nola is going to be your game two starter. And, you know, he's the guy that you paid, and he's the guy who's done it before, and he's, you know, pitched in big postseason games and succeeded in them. So I think that there's probably a 90% chance that the staff and even the front office, whoever decides that, goes with Aaron Nola as the game two starter. But I'll tell you what, Chris Sanchez, I've mentioned the home road splits before and just how impressive he's been this year. I wouldn't be shocked if they at least gave Chris Sanchez some consideration. And if I were picking, I would be totally fine with starting Chris Sanchez in game two at home, where his numbers have been way better. He's pitching like a 2-1 ERA at home, and his ERA on the road is like a 4-5. So I think that it's something to consider, but I don't think it's probably going to happen. And I think Chris Sanchez absolutely should be your game three starter. I don't even think there's a question. As much as, you know, I love Ranger Suarez, and understandably he's, you know, taken, he's not pitching at a 1.7 ERA anymore. We'll say that. And the velocity's not there. The finish on his pitches really isn't there. It feels like the back still could be bothering him a little bit. And I don't know if you can bank on that returning this year. And look, he's pitched in the postseason before, and he has a slow heartbeat, and he's been able to, you know, kind of thrive in high pressure situations. Of course, we know what he did out of the bullpen in the 2022 NLCS, but I just don't know if you can bank on that. And what Chris Sanchez has done this year has been really impressive. Despite the home road splits, I would still go with him game three if you're going Nola game two there. So that's kind of where I feel the rotation will shake out for the postseason. But bullpen. Wanted to get to the bullpen a little bit because that was also really good against the Brewers in this series. Orion Kerkering has been really incredible over the past month or so, and I'm really, really glad he's been able to kind of come through these struggles he had. And maybe I would say July. There was a few outings where he was just struggling with command. I remember that Minnesota game where they blew the lead at Target Field. Just couldn't get the ball down the plate, and he's one of those guys. If he can command the sweeper and he's throwing fastballs for strikes, then he is just an absolutely dangerous weapon to have in your bullpen. And just so many quick innings for him. Another one in Milwaukee the other night. And he's been really impressive, and just a guy who every time I see him, I just begin to trust more and more out there to give you a quality outing out of the bullpen. So really impressive stuff from Kerkering. He's throwing the fastball more, which is good. It means he's confident in it. So I think that in a big spot in the postseason where maybe it's a one-run game in the seventh or eighth inning, I'd feel very comfortable going to Orion Kerkering out of the bullpen for sure. And one situation to monitor moving forward is the, you know, Hoffman Estevez, I guess, closer situation. The other night, they bring in Estevez in the bottom of the ninth while the game is tied. And I thought it was probably a Jeff Hoffman spot, but I kind of understand why they went to Estevez, just because he hadn't worked in, I think, a little under a week. So I think they just wanted to get him in there. And but in a postseason spot, if it's a tie game in the bottom of the ninth, I want Jeff Hoffman coming out of the bullpen in that spot. So I think Jeff Hoffman should be this team's closer, and I think Estevez should be able to get high leverage spots. And, you know, you can debate whether you say, okay, if, you know, the best hitters on the other team come up, if, you know, William Contreras, Willy Adames, and Reese Hoskins come up in a postseason series, and it's in the eighth inning, and you want to throw Jeff Hoffman in the eighth inning, and then for the bottom of the order, Estevez in the ninth inning, that's fine. But I think that the highest leverage spot in the game should always go to Jeff Hoffman right now. So was a little surprised that they didn't use him, and I think that in the postseason, I hope that Hoffman is the biggest high leverage guy in this bullpen, because Estevez, he just scares me. He's the most, and Jack Fritz said this, and I think he said it best, he's the most Kimbrel-esque guy in this bullpen. Speaking of our buddy Craig Kimbrel, DFA'd by the Orioles, by the way. So bring him back? No, I'm just kidding. But so Carlos Estevez still scares me. A lot of hard contact, and the leadoff triple on the first pitch the other night was just brutal. And I just don't know if my heart is going to be able to take too many Carlos Estevez outings in the postseason. So that's a situation to monitor. And then Strom being your biggest high leverage lefty out of the bullpen as well. Jose Alvarado been better, but gave up another run last night. He looked pretty good. Bryson Stott should have gotten him out of that inning. He made an error on a double play, but then he gives up that gapper to right center field, and then the run scores. So that is probably how my pecking order goes amongst lefties. It would probably be Strom, my highest leverage lefty, then Alvarado, then you get Tanner Banks in there as well, maybe to get a couple tough lefties out in the middle of a game where you have to stretch your bullpen out a little bit. So that's kind of where I'm at with the bullpen. Jose Ruiz also kind of rough last night once he came in, but he didn't get to come in the clean inning, so I'll give him the benefit of the doubt there, kind of just cleaning up Taijuan Walker's mess. So back to the lineup before I round this out with the Mets preview. I think Bryce has some pop back, hopefully. We didn't mention had a nice little weekend, had the 2-home run game in the, you know, we'll call it the Cal Stevenson game. Shout out Joe from the Northeast last Saturday. So that was good to see. And then had another big one in Milwaukee earlier this week on Wednesday. It was on Tuesday. Yeah, I hit that on Tuesday. So OPS is still at 907, which means he's been incredible since in that homer drought. Like, he was hitting 300 something with an OPS just under 900, which is absolutely insane. And the only thing I'm watching with Bryce right now is kind of when he winces on those swings. Like, you can tell he's still in some pain, but he's just fighting through it. So we are on wince watch with Bryce Harper. Every time he's at the plate, I'm looking to see if he's wincing or not. So not great, but you just hope that in the postseason he can do what Bryce Harper does, slow his heartbeat down, and kind of just put all that in the back of his mind and be able to, you know, have the power and have all the ability at the plate that we've seen from Bryce Harper in the postseason over the past couple of years, because when he's on, there's truly no player that is a better postseason performer than Bryce Harper. So we'll monitor the wincing situation with, you know, the wrist and the elbow, and it seems like, you know, he's just in some pain swinging the bat. And I think that's part of what, you know, his swing makeup is going to lead to later in his career as well. Like, he's an aggressive swinger, and it's not him swinging for the fences. It's just his, you know, his swing and how he's, you know, always kind of mechanically swung a baseball bat. And I think that maybe later in his career is something that we go, oh, like, his body might deteriorate because of it. But I don't know if this had anything to do with either these wrist or elbow injuries. But, I mean, it definitely can help just hit the aggressive manner in which he, you know, goes about swinging the bat. So that's where I'm at with Bryce. Also, Brandon Marsh has been really good as of late. Last 15, he's over 300 with an OPS, well above 800. So I'm glad to see Brandon Marsh kind of go out of that, you know, few month long slump that he was in, and got a nice hit off a lefty last night too, I noticed. So we'll see once Austin Hayes comes back where the chips all fall. I don't know if Austin Hayes is a total lock to be on the playoff roster or not. And, you know, obviously the idea from Dombrowski in the front office when they brought him in was that Marsh was going to move back to center, and that Austin Hayes was going to be your everyday left fielder. I don't know if that's necessarily the case, given the fact that some of these guys, you know, on the bench have stepped up, like the Weston Wilsons of the world, like the Cody Clemens of the world, Cal Stevensons. All these guys have kind of, you know, stepped up here. So interested to see how the playoff roster will shake out, and I think we'll get a better idea of that as the season winds down. And they said that Austin Hayes should be coming back in the very near future from his kidney infection. So we will be able to, you know, kind of, I'll have a little bit of a tryout to see if he's either going to start or even be on the postseason roster, which I don't think is necessarily a total lock coming in down the stretch here. So that is where I'm at, kind of with the offense, with the pitching staff, with the bullpen. And I want to move on here to the preview of the Mets series this weekend. Obviously, the Phils dropped game one last night. Taijuan Walker, not great. Not great. Had a little belief in Taijuan after that bullpen outing against the Mets last weekend. And he definitely earned the start, I would say, just considering that Colby Allard and whatever you had, Tyler Phillips, didn't matter, Tyler Gilbert, whatever you had else, it wasn't really going to make much of a difference. But yeah, rough game one from Taijuan Walker. But Christopher Sanchez will look to bounce back, look to, you know, lead the Phils bounce back in game two as he takes on David Peterson, who this was the matchup last Sunday, and they were both incredible. They both went 7-plus innings, only gave up one run. And I expect it to be another good matchup because David Peterson has been really good for the Mets here. And the Mets are one of the hottest teams in baseball. You know, they're going to be a team heading into the postseason that's going to come in extremely hot. And I don't know if you want to face them or not. So David Peterson is one of the big reasons for that. He's pitching to a 2.85 ERA this year, 9-2. And he has just been really good for the Mets. So is Chris Sanchez, 3.24 ERA, especially coming off a really good outing. So that should be a good one to watch tonight for sure. It's on Apple TV. So when your parents are asking you, why isn't the game on cable? Tell them it's on Apple TV. I know. It's the worst. But anyway, Saturday, moving on, you got Ranger looking to kind of, you know, regain form here. The clock is ticking. We'll see if that velocity is up, if the stuff is any better. If, you know, even his body language, I can sense, hasn't been the greatest. I don't know if it's the back or maybe it's just frustration or what it is, but we'll look to see if Ranger can kind of regain some of that form right here down the stretch. And he will go up against fellow lefty Sean Manaea, who's got a 3.26 ERA, 177 strikeouts this year, and an 11-5 record. So another lefty that the Phillies will face after David Peterson. And then to round it out, on Sunday Night Baseball on Sunday, you have Zach Wheeler coming off an incredible start in Milwaukee going up against Tyler McGill, who the Phillies have had some success off of in the past, and is certainly the Mets, I would say, number five starter. He's got a 4.08 ERA and has been known to have some command problems in the past. So hopefully the Phillies hitters can stay patient and they can, like I said, take two out of three here. If you split this series against the Mets, you're in a really good position moving forward. And like I said, no reason to panic for the division. The mindset should strictly be on clinching a top two seed here, because that is most important, getting that bye. And then, you know, the chips falling where they may. There are a lot of tough teams going into the postseason. The NL postseason picture this year is, I think, far better than last year. There are all six teams that can legitimately go to the World Series, I think. The Mets are one of the hottest teams in baseball. The Diamondbacks have been struggling a little more as of late, even though they did get the Phillies a big win last night in Milwaukee. And also the Diamondbacks, I think, are one of the scarier teams in baseball as well. So I think all three division winners, all three wildcard teams could make a World Series push. And I think it's going to be a challenge for the Phillies, no doubt. But it's one of those postseasons where, you know, they're going to earn it if they get to the World Series, because there are no Miami Marlins of last year in the postseason. And I know the Diamondbacks obviously went to the World Series, but they had 84 wins last year. And I think every single team that gets into the postseason this year in the National League is going to end up with, I guess, 90-plus wins. So, you know, pretty good competition in the National League this year for sure. So that's going to wrap it up for this edition of Phillies Today. Thank you, as always, for listening to the pod. The Phillies' magic number to clinch the postseason, like I said, 1. To clinch the NL East, it is 4. We will see if they can shrink all of those numbers this weekend up there in Queens. So for Phillies 24/7, this has been Justin Morgenstern. See you, everybody.